According to some wives who wrote to the Home and Fraser Digest, men are different from women because they lose things and ask you what you've done with them. They take their shirts off without undoing the buttons. They take jumpers off by yanking at the back of the neck. Is there another way? They insist they can pack a car boot or a suitcase better than you. They think that sport is news. They wash up, but leave the sink dirty. They think houses are self-cleaning and fridges are self-replenishing. And they don't cook unless it's a barbecue, because that's macho. How did you score, hubbies? Well, it isn't my intention this morning to discuss the alternative ways of taking jumpers and shirts off, or whether men can pack suitcases or car boots better than women, or even whether there really is any news other than on the back page of the paper. Perhaps you haven't noticed, but it's interesting that none of these things come up as issues in the Bible. In fact, the Bible rarely enters into the details of what should happen in marriage. Rather, it lays down principles which are intended to aid in the outworking of the details. And one of the fundamental principles which the Lord lays down in the Bible for marriage, it's one which is increasingly, or has been increasingly, under attack throughout this century. And it is the principle of the husband's leadership in the home. Time and time again, we're told in the Bible that the husband is the head of the family and his wife is to live in submission to him. It tells it in direct statements. It says it in the implicit examples of the approved conduct in the scriptures. At face value, it seems like it's unfair, like it's unreasonable. And over the years, various people have attempted to reinterpret scripture to prove that it says something else. But every time, they have had to twist the scriptures, and they've had to deny their obvious meaning. To those who are honest in their search of the scriptures, there is but one message. Wives, submit to the leadership of your husbands. He is your head. You are his helper. So that's it. Wives say, does that mean if my husband insists he can pack the car better than I can, I must leave him to it? Or rather, I must do it under his direction? Does it mean I must clean the house, stock the fridge, cook the meals, except when it's a barbecue, even if he refuses to help? Does it mean I must sew the buttons back on his shirt because he was too lazy to undo them and won't sew them on himself? Is this the message you are giving to us? Do whatever your husband says. Well, actually, this morning, it's not my intention to address wives, but as I said last week, the short answer is yes. Unless it is a sin, wives are to do whatever their husbands require of them. Please don't throw anything at me. If you have a problem with that statement, then listen again to the longer version. It's on tape. You can borrow it or buy it. This morning we need to move on, because the Bible tells wives that they must submit to their husbands, but it also has something to say to those husbands. It doesn't just leave them as supreme head of the home. The Bible gives instruction on how a husband is to use his authority in the home. That instruction, as it concerns the husband's relationship to his wife, is that he is to submit to her. That's why I've entitled the message, Submission to Wives. But you husbands object immediately. I've never read in the Bible that husbands are to submit to their wives. And you'd be right. It never uses that word to describe the husband's relationship to the wife. I must confess to having chosen it for its provocative value. But I also mean to use that word. A husband is to submit to his wife, not in obedience. It's not in the same way as a wife submits to her husband. But a husband is to submit to her in the sense of putting her needs before his own desires. To love her, as 1 Corinthians 13 says, love is not self-seeking. Love puts the other one first. And in that sense, a husband is to submit to his wife. This is the key thought here in 1 Peter 3 and verse 7. Husbands, likewise, dwell with them with understanding, giving honour to the wife as to the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered. I say, husbands should be submissive to their wives, to provoke husbands to be selfless in their leadership. Wives are not slaves in the home to respond to their husband's every whim. Peter is quite insistent about that here in this verse. He gives a very serious warning to Christian husbands who refuse to submit to their wives in the sense of giving them due honour and consideration. It's interesting, in commenting on the making of Eve, Matthew Henry, the great Puritan commentator, said, "The woman was made of a rib out of the side of Adam, not made out of his head to rule over him, nor out of his feet to be trampled upon by him, but out of his side to be equal with him, under his arm to be protected by him, and near his heart to be beloved." This is precisely what Peter expounds here in our text this morning. So the leadership a husband exercises in the home is what I'm going to refer to as a submissive leadership. Sounds like a contradiction, but perhaps a better description is that it's a paradox. The husband is to submit to the wife in a very real way, and yet he is also to be the authority, the leader, the head over his wife. I want to consider firstly this morning what submissive leadership is not, then what submissive leadership is, and finally to give a reason why it should be that way. So, what submissive leadership is not? Well, firstly, submissive leadership is not harsh or domineering. Peter calls upon husbands to consider the comparative weakness of their wives. Now, I said last week that wives are not inferior to their husbands in many areas. They may be intellectually their superior. They may be spiritually their superior. In many ways, they may have greater gifts, greater abilities. But generally speaking, there are three ways in which a wife is weaker than her husband. More often than not, she is weaker physically. Most husbands could overpower their wives. And Peter is calling upon husbands to be considerate of their wives, not to threaten them with force, either a direct threatening or an implied threatening in mannerism and behavior. She knows that she would have a hard time of it if physical force was used. The husband is to be considerate of her physical weakness. Then there's emotional weakness, and that is from the man's point of view. A man sees a woman's sensitivity as being a weakness. Boys are brought up and told, "You're a big boy, you shouldn't cry, shouldn't respond emotionally to troubles and hardships." Women tend to be far more sensitive than men. It's their strength. It helps them in their responsibilities in the home, in the caring for children. It makes them far more ready to respond in care and love, in compassion and sympathy than men often are. But it is also a weakness for them within the marriage relationship, and husbands must be considerate of their greater sensitivity and be careful not to criticize or abuse the sensitivity of their wives. But the main idea that Peter has here is that husbands are to recognize and be considerate of the weakness of their wives in terms of authority. God has decreed that the wife is to submit to her husband, and the husband is to have authority over his wife. That is the wife's weakness. She has not the authority that the husband has in the home. He is over her in that respect, and he must be sensitive to her, that he shouldn't use his authority for selfish ends, just to do his own thing, to order the home for his own benefit, but must be considerate of his wife's needs. But she has not the authority to do her own thing and go her own way and order her circumstances for her own benefit. She must look to him for her comforts. He must be considerate of that weakness. And notice too that Peter speaks of the wife as the weaker vessel. And implied in that statement is that there are two vessels there. There's the husband as well as the wife. The husband is himself a vessel. It makes me think of Paul writing to the Romans and talking about God like a potter who makes one vessel for honour and another for dishonour. It's a completely different context. But it's the same idea that God has made these two vessels. To one he's given authority, to the other one, from the other one he requires submission. Both are made by the hand of God. Both are made for the glory of God. Both are under God's authority, and the husband is to recognize that. He too is a vessel made by the Creator. And he must himself be submissive to his Creator. So a submissive leadership is not a harsh, domineering leadership. It recognizes that there is an authority over the husband. It recognizes that the wife is weaker in certain areas. Secondly, submissive leadership is not equal sharing of leadership in the home. Peter tells husband to use their authority, to use it thoughtfully, caringly, and considerately, but to use it. Three times Peter has said to wives that they're to be submissive or they're to obey their husbands. The husband is definitely the leader in Paul's mind, in Peter's mind. He is to use, he is to exercise his authority. There isn't an equal sharing of this leadership in the home when leadership is submissive. Submissive leadership is not about transferring authority. There may be a time for delegating authority, but never for transferring authority. Submissive leadership is not about who has the authority, but submissive leadership is about how that authority is exercised. Peter is quite emphatic throughout this whole section. The husband is the leader, period. Thirdly, submissive leadership is not about giving way to a wife's wishes. Peter doesn't intend that submissive leadership means that the husband is simply there to rubber stamp what the wife wants to do. The husband is the head of the home. And though, as we shall see, he ought to give due consideration to his wife, his leadership is not to be manipulated by his wife. God's call to him to be considerate of her is not there for the wife to take advantage of. Just as a wife should never submit to her husband when called upon to sin, so a husband must never let his love for his wife be an excuse for sin. Abraham bowed to the wishes of his wife in Genesis chapter 16 when God had promised that Abraham would have a son. And Sarah was getting old and had not conceived. And Sarah said to Abraham, we're told, "See now, the Lord has restrained me from bearing children. Please go into my maid. Perhaps I shall obtain children by her." And Abraham heeded the voice of Sarah. But things didn't go too well. Sarah goes on and says to Abraham, "My wrong be upon you. I gave my maid into your embrace, and when she saw that she had conceived, I became despised in her eyes. The Lord judge between you and me." Sarah is pointing out that though it was her wish that he acquiesced to, he had no business doing so, and the Lord would hold him accountable. Husbands are not just to rubber stamp their wife's wishes. But it isn't just when there's sin involved. A husband will need to be very careful to distinguish between actual sin and his own preferences. Is this thing that my wife wants to do wrong? Or is it just that I don't like it? Sometimes he must give way to her. At other times he must exert his authority. He has the ultimate rule in the decisions of the home. He is the one who will ultimately be held accountable. He is the one who therefore must bear the responsibility. Fourthly, submissive leadership is not optional for husbands. Peter's exhortations here are both positive and they are active. He expects wives to actively obey their husbands, and he expects husbands to actively lead their wives. Husbands cannot opt out of leadership in the family. They shouldn't be harsh, they shouldn't be overbearing in their use of the authority that God has given them. Leadership is essential, however, and that leadership is to be submissive, but it is not to be relinquished. It is not to be handed over. It is to be caring and considerate. It is to be active for the good of others and not for self-pleasure and self-gain. Submissive leadership is not optional for husbands. He must lead. He must do so with a submissive attitude. So there are four things that submissive leadership is not. Submissive leadership is not harsh. It is not domineering. Submissive leadership is not the equal sharing of authority in the home. Submissive leadership is not giving way to the wife's desires and wishes. And submissive leadership is not optional for husbands. Let us move on to what submissive leadership is. Peter says, "Husbands, likewise, dwell with your wives with understanding." The word that is translated there, understanding, in the New King James and in the New American Standard Bible and in the NIV as being considerate, is actually the word knowledge. He says, "Husbands, dwell with your wives, live with your wives with knowledge." Submissive leadership is based upon knowledge. But what knowledge? What is in Peter's mind here when he tells husbands to dwell with their wives with knowledge or with understanding or with consideration? Well, he wants husbands, first of all, to know God and his requirements, to have that knowledge, a knowledge of what God wants from them, a knowledge of who God is. Husbands, Christian husbands, do you understand what Christ has done for you? Do you understand how Christ's love, his suffering, his death, is a pattern for your own relationship with your wife? We read Ephesians chapter 4, verses 22 to 33, which gives us that pattern, that illustration. The husband is to love his wife as God loved the church. And that is a high calling. Who is sufficient for these things? Do you know, husbands, what God requires of you in your relationship with your wife, in your marriage responsibilities? Have you read his word? Have you studied it to understand what your responsibilities are? Husbands, dwell with your wives with knowledge. Knowledge of God, knowledge of his plans and purposes, knowledge of his requirements of you within this relationship. Husbands are to know themselves. Do you know what sort of a person you are? Often we're the last people to know what we're really like. Men and women, likewise. It's other people who see, observe our selfishness, our critical spirit, our ingratitude, our care and concern, whatever it may be. Do you know yourself? Do you know what sort of person you are? Are you demanding? Compliant? Are you introverted? Are you selfish or selfless? What sort of person are you? Know yourselves, Peter says. What are your weaknesses? What are you good at? What are you not good at? Does your wife have compensating strengths that you can utilize within the marriage bond? What do you do that hurts or annoys or frustrates your wife? Should you change them? Will you change them? Husbands, know yourselves. And husbands are to know their wives. Do you know her daily responsibilities and burdens? After you go out to work, do you know what she does? Do you know what burdens and cares she carries? What occupies her time and her energy? When you ask for more, can she really reasonably be required to give more? Know her daily responsibilities and burdens. Know her personality. Know her strengths and her gifts. Does she have particular intelligence and abilities? Are you ignoring them? Or can you utilize them? Can you use them for the benefit of the home and family? Does submission go against her natural nature? Some women are naturally submissive. Others struggle with that. Do you know that? Are you willing and ready to be more sensitive, to compensate for that, to encourage her in that? Be careful. Know your wife's personality. Know her strengths. Know her gifts and use them. Know her limitations and weaknesses. Now, you may be able to do something with your knowledge and with your strength. And you assume that she can, but does she have that knowledge? Does she have that strength? It's no good requiring her to do something and then complaining when it's not been done right because she didn't know how you wanted it done. Know her limitations. Know her weaknesses. Be prepared to alter your expectations and adjust your demands to her. It's a sensitive issue, but be aware that from one period in the month to another, she may or may not be able to cope with things in the same way. Know her cycles and be prepared to adjust your requirements and demands accordingly. Be sensitive to her. Know her dreams. Know her opinions. Know what she wants out of life. She is a person. She has independent thoughts and ideas. Use them. I remember staying in a home once, and the father had just been telling the children to do this, do that, do the other, and then said, "Mummy, and you do this and do it this way." And she said, "Yes, dear, I have a mind as well." Pointing out that she was an independent person. She could think. Part of knowing your wife's knowledge will involve knowing what she wants, what she's able to do, what her dreams and her opinions are. She may have insights that you do not have. Take advantage of them. Use them. Consult her in the decision-making process. You have the authority to make the decisions, but that doesn't mean that you ignore her. Finally, know her spiritual state. You have a responsibility to shepherd your wife if you are a Christian. You have a responsibility to ensure that not only you have time with the Lord each day, but that she has adequate time with the Lord each day. Know how she is doing spiritually. Is she struggling in her walk with the Lord? Is she cold towards Him? That will affect her relationship to you. Her spirituality will affect her ability to submit to your authority with a gentle and a quiet spirit. Nourish her spiritually. And when she is struggling, when she's going through periods of dryness, just as you go through periods of dryness, make allowances for her. Try to help her in that. Husbands, know God and His ways. Husbands, know yourself, your strengths, your weaknesses. Husbands, know your wives. So submissive leadership is based upon knowledge. And submissive leadership recognizes the essential equality between men and women. Peter tells husbands to honor, to respect their wives, to give them honor as the weaker vessel, but also to honor and respect them as being heirs together of the grace of life. They are equal in their standing before God, brother and sister, though husband and wife. And husbands who recognize this will treat their wives with dignity, both in private as well as in public. They will recognize that there is an essential equality between them. And that will come into the picture when decisions are being made and when he is exerting his authority within the home. A wife's submission and a husband's authority are given to them by God for those particular roles. It has no implication whatsoever to their equality or non-equality, as I said last week. But thirdly, why? Why is a husband to lead in this way, in this submissive leadership style? Well, there are three reasons that are given here. Firstly, because of the differences between husbands and wives in their roles, she is the weaker vessel in terms of her obligation to submit. Therefore, she should be governed with a submissive leadership which recognizes that. The difference is one of roles imposed by God and not based upon differences in nature or in ability. And for those of you husbands who have wives with many gifts and great abilities, you need to be even more careful and considerate in your leadership of them. Secondly, Peter says that husbands should lead with submissive leadership because of the equality between husbands and wives in their spiritual standing. She is adopted into God's family and co-heir with Christ, just as you are. She should be treated with due honor and respect. Hers is no inferior position in the kingdom of God. She is a fellow citizen of equal status as her husband in the heavenly kingdom. So she is to be led considerately and with this submission in terms of sensitivity. And thirdly, Peter says that husbands are to lead with submissive leadership because of the link between leadership and the relationship with God. Peter says there, husbands, dwell with your wives with understanding, giving honour to the wife as to the weaker vessel, and being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered. You see, there's a link here between the way a husband leads the home and his relationship with God. Peter warns that the prayers of the husband will be hindered if he is careless in his leadership in the home. God has ordained the man as head and the woman as helper, not for man's benefit, but for God's own will and glory. And since man's authority is derived from God, any abuse of that authority inevitably affects his relationship with God. Husband, you have been given authority over your wife by God. He expects you to use that authority wisely and considerately. If you do not, then your relationship with God will be affected. Your abuse of the authority that he has given to you will reflect upon him and will bring dishonor to him. Throughout the scriptures, God shows a concern for the weak or the vulnerable. And the wife is vulnerable in her role in the home. God will not turn a blind eye to her pain or a deaf ear to her grief if she is being treated harshly, indifferently, uncaringly, oppressively by her husband. Christian husbands, remember that. Perhaps when you go through times of struggling and dryness in your walk with the Lord, think first about this. How are you using your authority in the home? And could this be affecting your relationship with God? In conclusion then, wives, you must submit to your husband's headship, whether he is a believer or not, whether his requests are reasonable or not. You are to submit. The only exception is when your husband's demands conflict with God's requirements. Wives must submit to their husbands in such a way that they are ready to live their whole lives for them. Husbands, you must not abuse your wives by taking advantage of their weakness in submission. Rather, you must treat them with care and with respect. Your failure to fulfill your responsibilities to your wife will result in a failure of your relationship with God. Husbands must so love and honour their wives that they are willing to lay down their lives for them. But to those of you who are not yet married, boys, begin now to give serious consideration to the kind of leader that you ought to be. Begin now to develop godly leadership attitudes, to be considerate, kind and caring. It's an enormous responsibility to be a husband, to love as Christ loved the church. It's a responsibility and a role that will affect not only your relationship with your wife, but also your relationship with God. You would be wise, even now, before you're married, to work at this. Girls, marriage, as you can see, is serious business. We may joke about signing your life away when you put your signature in the marriage register, but the truth is, in a very real sense, that is what happens. You have the choice of refusing or accepting a marriage proposal. Make sure you have seen evidence of a godly leader before you say yes. It may make the difference between being honored like a queen or living like a slave for the rest of your life. Finally, if you are a Christian here this morning, you are married to Christ. You owe him supreme obedience and submission, whether you're married or not. You can rejoice that there is no better husband than Christ. He never asks too much of us. His yoke is easy and his burden is light. He has given himself for us. He doesn't just say, I would die for you. He's done it. It is through his death that we have life. Give thanks and praise to God that he is such a gracious, a good, and a loving husband. And if you're not a Christian here this morning, then consider this. You're engaged to the devil. You will truly find him to be a hard slave master. Throughout the ages of eternity, you will regret having rejected the proposal of Jesus Christ to be his bride. But today it's not too late. You're only, as it were, engaged to the devil. You're not yet married to him. You can switch your allegiance. Will you not come to Christ with all your sin and plead with him to take you, to make you clean, to wash you in his blood, to clothe you in the wedding garments of his righteousness, to make you his bride? There can be nothing better for any person on the face of the earth than to know that they are to be married to Jesus Christ, the Saviour of the world.